Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I've never had closure, and neither has any of my brothers and sisters. I have six kids and two stepkids, and I have three grandkids of my own now, and he's never met anyone, you know? I get so mixed up when I talk to all the different family members. That's kind of why I stayed away from everything, and through all the years, I just assumed naively that, like, my grandma and the police would handle this situation, and then now here we are 24 years later. And he's still, there's no answer to anything, one way or the other. Then they tell me, oh yeah, that guy that had the case retired and nobody has the case. And then I was like, I don't know. I was like, wow, I naively thought that somebody was actively working this or something. He was an adult when he left. So if he wanted to be missing, that's his choice.
I mean, we're talking about four kids that don't have their dad. You know, I wish I had proof, and I wish that I could just tell them, yes, this is where he is, because my inner gut says he's alive, and see, I was right, he is. Why is there so many secrets? The police officer that was on the case at that time told me he doesn't believe that Danny is missing, that he's very much alive, but your typical case is someone who doesn't want to be found. And he told that to me, too, quite a few years after the fact, because he did tell me also, he said that generally when someone is missing, especially in a body of water that long after, he said their body is going to come up somewhere. It's just going to be somewhere, you know, whether it's a bone, whether it's something, but there's going to be some sort of body somewhere that's going to end up, you know, appearing.
On May 31st, 1995, 35-year-old Danny Lee Kelly disappeared from Gold Hill, Oregon. He had been staying with some friends when they called his family for help, stating he was acting strange. They thought he may need to go to the hospital. Several family members responded to the scene and witnessed Danny's strange behavior, talking to people who weren't there and acting paranoid. They attempted to get him into the car when he just took off running toward the Rogue River. His sister and her boyfriend chased after Danny, but he was never seen or heard from again. His family has many theories about what happened to Danny, from drowning in the river to him staging his own disappearance and taking off to Mexico. Nearly 24 years have passed since Danny disappeared, and his oldest son Shane has renewed the efforts to find answers. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 177 of The Vanished, Danny Lee Kelly's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Danny's son Shane is a longtime listener of the show, and he decided that it was time to tell his dad's story. So he contacted the show to inquire about having his case featured. Shane was not living with his father at the time of his disappearance. He told us a bit more about his life growing up and how he learned that his father was missing.
You know, my mom and dad,
they got divorced when I was five, so I kind of spent the school years with my mom and summer times with my dad. So that's kind of how I grew up. And then later on, you know, the disappearance part, sometime around January of 95, he was living in Washington, and I went up there to visit him. I got a tax refund, and so I spent my money on a vacation to go up there and visit him. And then it was just, I stayed up there for a month, and then it was just a couple months later that my mom had talked to my grandma, that's my dad's mom. She came and told me that originally they told me that he was dead. Then I got more and more information, and it was known that he was missing, and there was never a body found, and then, like, the whole family split into all these different theories, and like I said, so my mom came to a house where I was at. You know, I was back before the cell phone days, so my mom was able to track me down, and she said, your dad's dead. And I just kind of flipped out. I either took off from the house or I made my mom leave from that house. I don't know. It was all a blur after that. And I just went and partied for like a week or two. And then I went and got a hold of my mom. And then I kind of found out the truth. No, that supposedly he'd ran off from the family and hasn't been heard from since. And that there isn't a body. So I was already kind of trying to process the death. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. So if there's no body, and that means he's missing. Through my grandma Levina, which is my dad's mom, because she lived up there near where all this happened, she was the one that was dealing with the police. So all the information I got back when this happened was filtered through my grandma Levina and or my mom. Yeah, then there was just like the rumors, like, well, they thought maybe he just took off and wanted to disappear.
Shane spoke about what he knows about the day his dad vanished.
The day it happened, the way I just talked to my grandma recently, too. So she said it was my grandma, my Aunt Kara, which is my dad's sister, and my Aunt Kara's boyfriend at that time. They approached my dad, and he flipped out, and they said he ran through some thick part of the brush, and then that's the last they seen him. And then later on, my Aunt Kara said, well, she might have heard a splash, but the Rogue River that runs right there, it's a pretty turbulent river, so I don't know if you would hear a splash anyways, honestly, but...
Looking back, Shane has fond memories of his father and realizes how different things were back then.
Oh, he was very fun, very loving. He was the kind of guy that everywhere he went, he made friends, and he'd play guitar, and he was just into family and friends, and... You know, looking back, you know, he did have a drinking problem, but that was just kind of the family culture. Everyone just, all the grown-ups in the family drank back then. I was allowed to drink beer when I was a kid. I don't know, it was just a different time back then, like the 80s and 90s.
We spoke to Danny's mom, Levina, and she told us a bit more about Danny growing up.
Oh, he was very busy. He was taking things apart and putting them back together at the age of two and wanted to cook and wanted to do everything. He was really busy. I mean, I could send him to the store and he couldn't see over, but he'd carry a loaf of bread and set it up on the counter and she knew, well, Danny's here to buy something. I mean, he just wanted to do it. It didn't matter if I was going to go. He wanted to do it by himself. He was pretty much of a person that was independent. Well, my oldest daughter, she passed away when she was 13. And Danny and her were very close. And that got him upset. And then he ended up going with his dad. I wasn't going to let him go, but everybody told me I should let him go. He needed to know the situation he'd be in. And he had just lost his sister, and it was hard for me to let him go. A year and a half, I guess, and he was wanting to come back, but he didn't. He was afraid to say something to me. So my sister-in-law came and told me Danny wants to come home, but he doesn't want to ask if he can come home. And so I just went to him and said, how about you just come back and stay with me and Kara, your little sister, and who he, at the time she was born, climbed over the front seat to get in with. He said that was his baby, you know. I mean, he was just a really loving, loving child. And he did love his sisters. He kind of turned all of his things to Kara when Rhonda died, his older sister. He was pretty much of, like, I'll take care of everything. You know, he was just always the kid, if something happens to my mom, I'll take care of her. Kara said, no, I'll do it. No, you won't. I'll take care of her. She needs something. He just was an old soul. Danny was the favorite, but they were all favorites in their own ways, you know. But he was just the kid that was next to his mom all the time. He was a small kid, and he had a lot of problems with being bullied. But then he suddenly grew up to be 6 foot tall. He was so talented, he started playing. I went and bought him a saxophone. He started playing, and then eighth grade graduation. I mean, he never brought it home. He never practiced. He never did anything. And went to eighth grade graduation, and they had Danny come up in front of the band because he was in band, but never said anything about it. And they said he was going to do a solo, and he played Summertime. And let me tell you, I will start crying right now. He was so good that we all are, everybody's mouth dropped, because he never, I mean, nobody knew he could play like that. It was just natural. He was a pretty special kid.
Shane isn't Danny's only child. After splitting up with Shane's mom, Danny went on to have more children through other relationships.
You know, originally he was with my mom until I was five. And then after their divorce, he got with a lady named Marcy and had two kids with her. So I have a half brother and sister from her that actually live right up by where he went missing from. And then they had a falling out, and then he got married to another lady named Nada. And so I have a half sister from her too, that lives right down here, I don't know, about an hour away from me.
Levina told us about one of the last times she had seen her son.
That was one of the last things that happened. He came down because my husband at the time and I were going to go to Mazatlan and live there. And so he came down from Washington to see us before we left. He says, oh my goodness, I've always wanted to go there. Now you're going to get there before I do. So he said, but I'm going over to Donise, and oh, I can't remember her husband's name right now. I'm going over there. They're either going to pay me the money for building that motorcycle for him, or I'm taking the motorcycle. And I said, please wait. I had all the other grandkids there that weekend. And I mean, I've got a lot of grandkids. I said, wait till I get them fed, and then they can stay here and I'll go with you. No, it's okay. I just need to go over there. Don't worry, Mom. I'll be back because I've got a job on Monday. So I've got to go back to Washington. And he was real excited about the job.
After Danny left that day, Levina started to become concerned.
I called and called, wanting to talk to him. He talked to me two or three times that day, so I knew he was okay. He called and let me know how he was and that everything was fine. He said, they're not home, but I'm just right around the corner, and I'm having a sandwich. And anyway, I started calling that house to talk to Danny, and she would always give me this Donise. She would give me excuse. Oh, he's out there with her husband in the garage and yada, yada. Or they went to town, and, you know, that was on the weekend. I was probably on Sunday was the main part when I just kept calling her. And on Monday, I called her, and she said, oh, well, they're not here. By Wednesday, I mean, I told Ron, I've got to go over there and see what's happening. But his kids were out from Tennessee, and I was the hostess, the cook, and bottle washer. She bottle washer there. So I had to stay there not wanting to. And I always kicked myself for not just jumping in the car and going over there. Because I would have known if anything was happening. I would have known if I was there in person.
Then Lavina got a call about Danny.
On Wednesday, Donise called me and she says, you better come over here and get Danny. He's acting weird. That's when I went over and he was drinking ice water. And when I was talking to Danny before he walked over and was standing over by the car that he had driven, that's when he said he was just going to go over there for a minute. When I started talking to him, I got there, he's drinking ice water, and he said, I'm fine. And, of course, my husband said, your mother's been worried sick over you. He said, I know, Father, and that's the only time he ever called Ron anything but Ron. He always called him Ron. You know, he didn't call him Dad because he was pretty much lived with Dennis Powell most of his life. So then he says, but you're going to be really proud of me because, and so will everybody else be proud of me. And because I'm going with my supervisor's going to pick me up at the airport. I'm going to do something and you're going to be proud of it. And I said, well, why don't you first come home with me and Ron, and we'll bring you back here to the airport tomorrow. I'll bring you back in time to catch your plane. So he said, okay. But he said, I'm going to go over here for a minute. And he was even, he said, there's some police over there, and I'm going to go see what they're standing here for. And so he went over, and I don't know if he was talking out loud to him or anything. I didn't see that. But about that time, my daughter and her boyfriend pulled up. And so Tim went right over there. And that's when he said that to Danny. Of course, Danny just took off running. Of course, he denies anything. He doesn't really admit to. But I heard him. Danny just straighten up, you know. There's nothing wrong with you. Well, there was something wrong with him.
Lavina, her daughter Kara, and Kara's boyfriend Tim tried to talk some sense into Danny. They wanted to get him into the car.
He was running the opposite direction, but he wasn't running from me. Actually, who he was running from, when my daughter came with her boyfriend, Tim went over and talked to him. He said, Danny, why don't you straighten up? There's nothing wrong with you. And that's when Danny just took off running towards the river. And so I tried to run after him, and my daughter says, it's too dark. It was about 8:30 at night. And then they came back, and they said, he's not down there. But she said, we did hear a big splash, like the rock went in, like, you know, a big rock was thrown in the river.
According to Lavina, after Danny went missing, the woman he was living with in Washington made the trip to Oregon to aid in the search.
The girl that he was living with in Washington, she wasn't a girlfriend, but they were really good buddies. It was more like a platonic thing. She wanted to be his girlfriend, but she came down because he brought her car down. So she came down, and her and I made up posters and went all over Gold Hill, putting posters up and asking everybody about him and neighbors, and we just was going everywhere. I couldn't get help from the papers or the TV shows or anything to put Danny's picture on because the deputies, they said, oh, no, you don't. It's because they, when you go in and ask them, they call the sheriff's department, and the sheriff's department said, oh, no, he was running from his mother. I said, no, he wasn't. He was running the opposite direction.
Lavina spoke to the people who lived in the area around where Danny disappeared, and one of the neighbors told her that she had witnessed him acting strangely before he went missing.
I found out about the lady right next door to them. Danny had come in and knocking on the door, and he thought that was his sister's house, and it was the little lady, and she got scared. She called the police, And he says he wanted to see his sister. He knew this is her house, and he came to see his sister. He didn't go in. He was at the door. She called the police, and the police came. And they said that he was sitting in the police car. He sat there and sat there while they were talking to the people, and they let him go.
After Danny disappeared, rumors began to spread about what may have happened to him.
There was like the rumors that, you know, he was involved in drugs in that area, and somebody maybe got rid of him, you know, got rid of my dad. And there were some shady characters in the area at that time. And so there was never a resolve. And I always remember my grandma telling me that as soon as she told the sheriff's department up there that my dad was possibly high or drunk the day she seen him and he ran off, they never really took the case seriously after that. There was never really any media coverage, anything of that sort.
In the early days following Danny's disappearance, his mother had gone around talking to everyone she could to see if anyone had information. She came across a man who thought he may have seen Danny.
She talked to a guy that had like a taco truck or some kind of food truck at a park, like a couple weeks after he went missing, because my grandma was pretty dedicated there for the first couple months of going around. So she talked to a taco truck, and he said that he seen it. A guy came to his truck and said it was his birthday, and that matched my dad's description. Well, the day my dad went missing was like May 31st, and his birthday is June 5th. So that kind of made sense to my grandma.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. As with any case, after nearly 24 years, memories can be foggy. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office was kind enough to grant us access to Danny's missing persons file, which has witness statements from back in 1995. Lavina is the person who reported Danny missing. When she was interviewed on June 2, 1995, she stated that Danny had recently moved to the Gold Hill area from Washington, and that he was despondent over his divorce and had a drinking problem. She said that on May 31st, Danny had been at his friend Troy's house. She received a call from Troy that evening asking her to come pick up Danny because he seemed ill. She arrived at Troy's home around 8 p.m., and Danny appeared to be under the influence, delusional, and seeing and talking to people who didn't exist. She tried to get him into the car, but he ran into the foliage near the Rogue River and was never seen again. The officer then contacted Danny's friend Troy, who stated that Danny had been staying at his guest house behind his house for 3 days. He had also observed Danny's delusional behavior. Troy described the shoreline in the area as gentle, and he didn't believe that Danny would have just fallen into the river. On June 3, 1995, searchers scoured the area for Danny. It states that they went as far up and down the riverbank as they could without actually entering the water. On June 5th, they searched even further downstream. When speaking with Lavina again, she told them that Danny appeared very ill and that his skin and eyes looked yellow. They found a pair of men's Reebok sneakers, which is the brand that Danny was known to own. The shoes were a size 10.5. The police asked Lavina about the shoes, and she said that Danny wore an 8.5. About a week after Danny disappeared, the police received a tip from a local shop clerk, who was nearly certain that she had seen him on the afternoon of June 5th. A man came in and purchased a can of beer and a pack of cigarettes. She described him as very dirty and spaced out. She gave them a rough physical description that did closely match Danny. She said that she was 95% certain that it was him. As the months passed with no sign of Danny, his case became inactive for many years. It wasn't until 2008 that additional interviews were conducted. Lavina was contacted to inquire about getting a DNA sample on file. Lavina had mentioned earlier that her daughter had been there too when Danny ran off. Danny's sister Kara spoke to investigators in 2008. She remembered that Danny had come to visit back in 1995, and she was under the impression that he wasn't due to stay more than a week. But she thought it was odd that Danny had a car packed full of clothes for such a short stay. Kara told the officer that Danny seemed different. His skin looked yellow, and he appeared bloated. She also noted changes to his personality. He seemed secretive and like something was constantly bothering him. Kara said that Danny no longer had a desire to smoke marijuana, and his tolerance for alcohol was much lower than what it had been in the past. She said that he used to be a half case of beer per day minimum type of guy, and that now he seemed intoxicated after only a few beers. Kara told the investigator that she accompanied her mother, stepfather, and her boyfriend to pick up Danny, after his friend had called asking them to come get him. Kara said that Danny was acting crazy, and that she gave him a hug and noticed that he had blood dripping down from his scalp and scratches all over his arms. He was talking to birds and people who weren't there. Kara says that she remembers he wasn't wearing any shoes, just an unbuttoned Hawaiian shirt and khaki shorts. Kara remembered that her boyfriend said to Danny to get the F in the car, and Danny threw his hands up in the air and said he was sick of everyone trying to tell him what to do. That's when he ran in the direction of the river. Kara and her boyfriend Tim took off after him, but they couldn't find him anywhere. She said that as they made their way back to the car, they heard what she thought could have been a loud splash or possibly a gunshot. They went back to look again, but didn't see any trace of Danny. She remembered one last little detail that was kind of odd. During one of the searches, someone found an avocado and bacon sandwich near a bridge, and she believed it was Danny's because that was his favorite kind of sandwich. They also spoke to Don East in 2008. She was still living on the property that Danny had disappeared from. Troy, who was also there that night, was deceased by this time, but she shared what she could remember. She said that Danny had lived with them for a short period of time before he moved to Washington. He had come back to the area, and she said that he was a totally different person than the Danny who had lived with them previously. She too noted that his skin appeared to be yellow. His personality had changed, and he seemed paranoid. She said the night before, he had been running around the house and property in a crazed manner, certain that Troy had a gun and wanted to kill him. The next day is when they decided to call Danny's family and ask them to take him to the hospital. Danny said that she didn't actually see Danny run off. She had been inside the house at the time and only knew what Troy had told her, which was that Danny got into an altercation with his family and ran towards the bushes. Kara and her boyfriend Tim ran after him, but later came back when they couldn't locate him. As Shane has gotten older, he's become more interested in finding out what happened to his father.
Recently, I've been in contact with that sheriff's department, too, to try to find out more information. Because like I said, I mean, that, well, it's almost 24 years now. So I'm just trying to refresh everything. And that guy basically told me the original detective that my dad's case was assigned to is retired. So nobody's had his case for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. So now they're in the process of assigning someone to the case. But all he would tell me is it's an open investigation. In their eyes, they just viewed it as my dad walked off one night and never returned.
When trying to put the pieces of the puzzle back together now in 2019, Shane has thought back to the things his dad was involved with back then.
I know he would do cocaine sometimes, and they call it meth now, but it was crank back then. But I never really get like too involved with that. I mean, he always came back to reality and he always worked, you know, so. But I mean, like growing up, like in the early 80s, all the adults everywhere I went, like smoked pot and drank beers. That was just normal. So to me back then, I didn't see a problem with it. But now looking back, yeah, I think all my family are some sort of alcoholics or whatever. So
since Shane's grandmother is getting older, he's been speaking to her about Danny's disappearance and taking notes of what she knows about the day of his disappearance. She recently told him something that he had never heard before.
So he left her house and he went over there to Gold Hill, Oregon, where he was trying to get a motorcycle back that he built a couple of years previously. And supposedly they took it and pawned it. And he told her that he wasn't coming back without either the motorcycle or the money. So that was something that I hadn't heard her ever tell me before, that she told me about a month ago. She said she had talked to him after he left and he seemed like delusional. She was thinking that maybe someone poisoned him. There was this couple where he would go to that were supposedly his friends, Troy and Donise. And that was right where he ran off from. That's like the actual site of where he went missing from in Gold Hill. My grandma was said all along that, like, you know, she's seen him, my dad, drunk and high before, but she never heard him like that. So she was thinking there was something else involved, like somebody poisoned him or something. But I don't know. There's like all these little conspiracy theories from different family members, and it's hard to make sense of everything.
Danny had been going through a divorce from his wife, Narda. There has been some speculation that maybe he was depressed over the breakup and may have harmed himself, but Shane doesn't see it that way.
You know, I see him in January of 95, and this happened in May of 95. And I had just spent a month with him. I mean, it wasn't like he was totally devastated, in my opinion, over the divorce. So I think that's kind of misleading how my grandma reported that originally, because they had already been split up for a while. It wasn't like a fresh divorce, and then he took off. They had already been separated, and I don't know if they were technically legally divorced yet, but they'd already been split up for like a year or more.
Shane mentioned that his family has various theories as to what happened to Danny, and they have even had arguments over it. Danny's mom moved to Mexico, and that became a source of one of the theories.
Well, what was weird, and this set off a whole bunch of other theories with the family, like 90 days after my dad went missing, my grandma and her husband just up and moved to Mexico for like 8 years or something. So then there's the whole other side of my family that thinks that my grandma was hiding my dad down in Mexico for some reason. And my ex-stepmom, I guess, Narda, because, you know, my dad always followed my grandma around. She moved to Mexico 90 days after this all happened, which in her eyes isn't normal if your child's missing. And so she thinks that my grandma moved to Mexico to hide my dad for some reason. She had a private eye at one point, but after their divorce, she was like a single mom and she ran out of money. But supposedly that guy was on to a few things. And then some other family members went down there on a cruise. My grandma lived in Mazatlan. Their boat was going to park there for a day or two or whatever the cruises do. And, my grandma was supposed to meet everyone there, and she like totally flaked and didn't talk to anyone for a while after that and made up some excuse, which further fueled. So there's like a split in the family. There's the one theory that my grandma's involved with everything, and help facilitate him missing. And then there's my grandma who says she thinks he either died or hit his head and has amnesia.
After Levina moved away to Mexico, she says she kept her phone line with the hope that one day Danny would call.
I even left my phone number connected, and because we ended up down in Mazatlan for 6 years, and I left my phone connected the whole time and had them ring my friend that was taking care of our house and our rental, and I had the phone ring to her house. So, because I think I said, well, maybe if he fell and hit his head, maybe he doesn't remember anything. But I knew he would always remember my phone number. Maybe he'll call me, you know, if he's okay, if he's not dead. They never found his bones. They found a lot of bones in the river and at the ocean where Rogue River goes into the Pacific Ocean.
I wanted to know more about this theory that Danny went to Mexico. On the surface, it seems a bit far-fetched and possibly more like family lore. Shane mentioned that his stepmom, Narda, believed this was a strong possibility, so we got in touch with her. She spoke about how she met Danny and what their relationship was like.
My family owned a salon, and that's how we met. He had come in to get his hair cut, and I'm the one who cut his hair, and he just had, you know, a very infectious personality and joking, and that's kind of how we were as well. So he just kept coming back in, and then we eventually started dating from there. Our relationship was good. It was actually good probably the first couple of years, and not that it was bad at any point, other than his family, they drank a lot. And so that part of Danny started coming out where, you know, he, of course, we would go out to eat and that kind of stuff. And he would drink a lot. And unfortunately, with his drinking, he was not a very friendly person. He was never abusive. He was just an angry drunk. And so that presented problems with us towards the end. And then, of course, I, you know, had gotten pregnant, which we had talked about that, and he tried to cut back on his drinking and whatnot, and it just kind of started back up again, which then led us to separating. And, you know, we were separated for a couple of years before I filed for divorce, but through it, the relationship wasn't bad. There was just certain things I just couldn't live with anymore. So I guess he was in a rehab. I did not know that prior to us getting together, but prior to us getting together, he was in rehab for drugs, for cocaine. He also later into the relationship had gone up to Oregon, and he came back. He went up there to visit his mom and then came back and was back addicted again to using, which that also presented a huge problem between us. And so he, off and on, like, he would try to stop and then he would get back into it. There was one point where he was pretty, I don't know what the word is, but he, from the using of it, he would see things that weren't there, hear things, you know, that weren't there. Like, he was seeing like little spots on the walls that they were speakers that the CIA had planted in our house. And, you know, then he would hear voices and he'd go outside and say that the CIA was hiding up in the trees and this kind of stuff. And I think that all that was basically because when he started using again, he was, of course, not sleeping for days on end. So I'm pretty sure that a combination of that and no sleep and no eating was definitely getting the best of his mind. But so, yeah, that was another reason too, that with me being pregnant, I just couldn't do it. And then he got to a point where he would throw things and just become very belligerent and whatnot. And so I did call the police and he was arrested. And because he had warrants and stuff that he had not taken care of, he went to jail. our daughter was born at that time. So I was taking her to see him. About that time is when we really kind of fell apart, because afterwards, like I said, I was done. I couldn't do it anymore. So we were still married. I didn't file for a divorce or anything at that time. And he had gone to Oregon with his mom. And then from there, he was in Washington with his stepdad, who is no longer living. And then, to my knowledge, he was living with another girl by the name of Mary.
Danny and Narda's relationship had broken down long before his disappearance. She found out he was missing when she got a call from Lavina.
Lavina called me and told me that she just wanted me to know that Danny was missing. And then she proceeded to tell me that... Now, the story that she told me was completely different than what she's shared with anybody, you know, like the other kids. But she told me that basically what had happened was he went crazy because I filed for a divorce, and which I didn't understand because it was a couple of years later and he had already gotten on with his wife, you know, up in Washington. So she told me that. And then she told me that what had happened was that he had gotten into an argument with his mom and his sister. And he was very angry, and Lavina said she thought he was drinking. And so they were by the Rogue River, and he took off running and was running through a bunch of the wild berries and stuff. And the train was getting real thick and they couldn't keep up with him. And she said that she... heard a splash in the water, and then they finally were able to make their way through the bushes to where he supposedly jumped in, and they found his shoes on the side of the river. And she told me that she had put some missing persons posters that she had made, you know, up, and she contacted a psychic to try to find out what had happened to him. And you know, and then of course I was asking her questions like, why are you contacting a psychic instead of working with the police department? And then at that point, I started calling the police department.
Narda explained why she believes Danny could be in Mexico.
So literally 3 months after she moved to Mexico, she kept her phone line going over here up in Oregon. And when I would speak to her, none of it made sense. She never showed any, remorse or upset. So I then, like I said, started keeping in touch with the department, the police officer that was on the case up in Oregon. And he told me when he kept saying there's nothing yet, finally he told me that he said in all the years that I've been on the force, he said, this is definitely a classic case of somebody who does not want to be found. And so when I asked him, so you think that he's still alive? And he told me, I very much do think he's alive. And he said, I don't think that there's any evidence that shows that he is actually not living anymore. And he said, I've seen too much of, you know, this type of thing. And it's your classic case of someone who doesn't want to be found. And then I started questioning Lavina too, because I had even mentioned to her, it doesn't make sense that somebody's going to jump into a river yet stop to take time long enough to take their shoes off and then jump in. It was just certain things just did not make sense to me. And then she came to a point to where she no longer answered my calls. And until this day, she doesn't answer my calls. And she was supposed to meet my mom, went on a cruise to Mexico and had called Lavina, and they were supposed to meet. And Lavina went through all of the plans with my mom that once she got to the port, they were going to meet. She was going to come and pick her up and have lunch and take her to this new house that she had. And then when my mom got there, she called. And of course, Lavina never answered the phone and never showed up. And my mom tried calling her for a couple of weeks after, and there was no, you know, she never answered. And I tell you that because all along, the story to me has not, it's, there's too many missing pieces in it. And I honestly, with all my heart, believe that maybe not today, but I believe that he was still alive, or he was still alive. I believe that, you know, I don't have proof for any of this. It's just being in their family and married to him, and knowing that he worked, they owned a plumbing business when I came into the picture, and they never took taxes out of his paychecks. He owed back taxes. He had warrants for, you know, DUIs and that kind of stuff. He owed child support to the state of California for Shane. There's just so many things going on with him. And when he was arrested, when he was arrested because of the situation between him and I, shortly thereafter, he also got pulled over again. And I guess Levina put bail up for him and he jumped bail. And then, you know, then he ends up missing not long after, well, I guess a year or whatever after that. But something that Shane had told me, that I asked him if he had shared this with you, and he said he completely forgot until him and I were talking and we were like trying to piece everything together again. And he said that when he went on a job with his dad, he was sitting in the back of their work van, and Danny had said, well, he also had told Shane too, that if anything ever happened to where he had to disappear, he would be using the last name of Tremaine, which is my maiden last name. So that's twice that he had said that. But he also said, him and his stepdad were talking about if he had to disappear, he was going to end up going to Mulegé, Mexico. And Shane told me that at the time, because he was young, he said that he thought it was like some fantasy place. You know, he didn't realize it was someplace real. And then he told me a couple weeks ago that he literally looked it up and he said, it's a real place. And he said, it's, you know, there's like 3,200 people. It's off of Baja of Mexico. Used to be where you couldn't even get there except for by plane. Now there's a road out there. So Shane's biggest thing he kept telling me is, how did he know that many years ago about this Mulegé when there was no internet, nothing like that? So it's just, again, it's like another, is he there hiding out? Is he, you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's just so many little bits and pieces. And Levina tells a different story to everybody. She's told a different story to Shane. She told a different story to me. She told a different story to her other granddaughter. The police officer that was on the case at that time told me he doesn't believe that Danny is missing, that he's very much alive, but your typical case of someone who doesn't want to be found. And he told that to me too, quite a few years after the fact, because he did tell me also, he said that generally when someone is missing, especially in a body of water that long after, he said their body is going to come up somewhere. It's just going to be somewhere, you know, whether it's a bone, whether it's something, but there's going to be some sort of body somewhere that's going to end up appearing. And, you know, he told me, because there was some stuff he couldn't tell me too, and he did say that to me, but he also told me too the same thing I said, because I mentioned to him about the tennis or the shoes on the side, the tennis shoes, I guess is what they were. And I guess there really was shoes there, but they weren't Danny's size that he wore. So that tells me too that Levina either put shoes there or she just happened to see shoes and added it to her story. But, you know, again, who's going to take the time if they're that distraught and that out of their head and angry or whatever, and they're running to get away from somebody and they're going to jump in? You're not going to take your shoes off. I mean, most often you're not going to take your shoes off. You know, if anything, you might take your shirt off or something, but you're not going to stop to take your shoes off and then put them neatly on the, you know, side by side right there on the stand.
Despite her belief that Danny is in Mexico, Norda doesn't carry any hard feelings about the situation.
Danny had an enormous heart. I mean, he really, really was not a bad person. He just unfortunately had a family and that were drinkers. And he grew up in Santa Paula, small town, lots of drugs there, got messed up with the wrong people.
Many people seem to assume that Danny went into the water that day, but they always expected that his remains would turn up eventually.
I know that later on through the years, it was always said, like, I never heard this firsthand, though, from the police, but like the police said, after that amount of time, there would have been remains found. And so they were thinking that maybe he just took off and disappeared because, you know, somebody falls into a river, eventually they find some bones, a body, something, but nothing's ever been found.
Over the years, remains have been recovered that they thought could be Danny.
There's been twice, and they brought my grandma and my sister that lives real close by up there in for DNA tests. So there's been two times, and then the remains ended up not being him.
Shane struggles with the idea that his father could have abandoned him and his siblings, but he just doesn't think that's something his father would do.
I don't know. I've been thinking about this real hard over the, you know, this past week, and I think it's one of two things. He took off, or somebody that he was involved with in that area killed him. I don't see a reason for him to take off. Honestly, I know he had some, like, tax evasion. He hadn't paid taxes in multiple years, and he had some child support issues. It was all financial things, but I don't see that as a good enough reason to take off and forget your whole family. I don't see that. I don't think that's in my dad's personality, honestly. The flip side of that, well, I think, well, if he did take off, he would have come back by now. And like I said, he did evade taxes. So he always worked cash type jobs. He was a journeyman plumber, but so he was already kind of off the radar a little bit before this ever happened, you know? So I would see it being easier for him since he already lived like that to take off and stay off the radar. But I just don't see him doing that. So something about my dad and his mom was like, they kind of moved around, like from Lancaster, California to Oregon, and they went back and forth. But he never stayed away from his mom. Like, he always lived somewhere in the vicinity in the same city. And if, like, her and my grandpa moved to, like, because they always, like, had a little business of some sort, they moved to a different state and started a business. I mean, within a few months, my dad would move. And he never went too far from her. I know he owed some child support to my mom. It wasn't like he committed a murder and he was wanted for that and running. You know what I mean? Like tax evasion. I mean, whatever.
Shane doesn't think that his father would have walked away, but Shane's sister spoke to one of the witnesses who said something that made him second guess that.
So I talked to my sister, who's younger than me. She's younger than me by, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, but she lives up there right by where all this happened. So like I said, the day he ran off, it was my grandma, my aunt, and my aunt's boyfriend, Tim. So she said that she went and paid a visit to Tim years later once she got older. And this guy, Tim, said that after he ran off, he's seen my dad again and talked to him. And according to my sister and sister's story of this conversation, that he said he just didn't want to be found. This was like the same day of the incident. Like, he ran off and everyone kind of spread out looking for him, and he happened to run into him. But now this guy, Tim, is dead now. So I can't verify any of that. He actually had a conversation, you know, according to what he told my sister. But so this guy was always on meth, like forever. So I don't know how much of what he said was true. I don't know. You know, I don't know if he was delusional that day. I don't know. I only met that guy, Tim, like once or twice in my whole life. He was always strung out, and he eventually died from being a drug addict.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. We were also able to speak with Detective Tim Pike about this case. He didn't have this case back in 1995 when Danny went missing. He told us a bit about what he does and how he became involved in Danny's case.
My name is Tim Pike. I'm a detective with the Jackson County Sheriff's Office. And I work for about the last 20 years. I work as a death investigator. I'm with actually detached with the medical examiner's office. So I'm a scene investigator is my typical day-to-day function. I came to detective in about 2002, 2003. And so our missing persons, I mean, we all, at some point, we try to learn a little bit about each case just in case a tip comes in or we're talking to somebody that something is mentioned, maybe, okay, I think I know the case they're talking about. So we tried to become a little familiar with our long-term missings. And so that was kind of, I knew about Danny Kelly, you know, on vague terms. I knew a little bit about the disappearance and that it was still a long-term missing. So initially, the case was investigated by a patrol officer, Ron Walsh. And so the case would have been assigned, it was his beat or his section of the county he was covering when the family reported him. So he took the initial report back in that era in the mid-90s. We had several deputies that were also search and rescue coordinators, if you will. And so Ron took the initial report and then he contacted a search and rescue deputy to coordinate searches. So Ron kind of became the case agent, if you will. So he was reported on June 2nd of 1995 as missing. His mother had gone, and I think we later find out it was mother and sister, had gone to his address to pick him up. His roommate or a person that was living on the property with Danny called the mother on the 31st and said, hey, you need to come and get Danny. He's acting irrational, kind of described this irrational behavior. He goes, I can't deal with him. You need to come get him to a hospital. And so the mother, and I believe it was also the sister, went to the property and they saw Danny, and he's described, I don't think it was initially, but in the next day and then several days later, he's described by several people as being jaundiced or yellow. They said his skin appeared to be yellow. He appeared to be kind of bloated. But he was talking to people that weren't present. They also describe he had scratches, maybe similar to running through blackberries on exposed area of his skin and a little bit of blood, but just sort of these scratch marks. And they tried to get him to come into the car and he took off running. I guess it would sort of be a southbound direction, but the Rogue River runs right behind the property that he was at. And they described that he kind of runs into the trees, into the bushes, and they don't see him. In a later interview, I believe in 2008, the family actually said another individual was present. He went running. I believe it was the sister and her boyfriend. They went running after Danny, and they couldn't find him in the thicket, if you will, or the brush. And then they heard a loud sound. They said it could be like a gunshot, or it could have been the sound of somebody hitting the water. And so that kind of comes out about 13 years later. That initial piece, I don't think, was shared with Ron, the investigating deputy. So I believe it comes out, Detective Eric Fox, I believe it's in 2008, recontacts the family. The president's DNA initiative had kind of kicked in, and so we were going back through cold cases, contacting families, making sure we had DNA to send to the University of North Texas. So Detective Fox contacted the family, and I think that's where that is made known to us.
Detective Pike told us more about that sandwich that was allegedly found during the search for Danny.
They said during one of the searches, and so I don't know if they mean early on or a family search that was done later, underneath an overpass at Rock Point Bridge, which goes over the Rogue River, they find a bedroll and a bacon and avocado sandwich. And I think the sandwich is partially eaten. And they tell Detective Fox that was Danny's favorite sandwich. And I don't think we have a time frame on that, though, as far as, was that 3 months later or 6 months or a year or whatever. But it's just the sandwich that they saw, or they were made aware of it being there, and they just said that was Danny's favorite sandwich. So kind of what I make of it, I don't know. I mean, if it's his favorite sandwich, why is there some remaining? is my first thought. Other than that, I mean, it's just this thing that's mentioned. And obviously, there's nothing we can do with that. I mean, we can't recover or go look for it or whatever. So it's just something that was mentioned by the family. I think Detective Fox just kind of, okay, and he put it in the report, but nothing obviously was done with it.
Detective Pike told us that after all of these years, no one has come forward with any evidence suggesting that someone else harmed Danny.
Nothing in the reports to suggest anybody had something to do with his disappearance. Even in the 2008 interviews, the family kind of goes back to Danny not being healthy. I believe there was some chronic alcohol use, but family, friends state, he appeared jaundiced. And typically that could be a sign of liver failure or end-stage liver disease. And so they describe that, but then the behavior. So, obviously, methamphetamine or drug-induced behavior, or it could be a mental illness. He was having a mental episode. We don't know. But then we just have him running. That stays consistent, him running toward the Rogue River and disappearing. And so for somebody to have done something after that, we just don't have any evidence of it. There's been no one else has ever come forward to suggest, an alternative.
Adding to the mystery of this case, Detective Pike says that most people who have drowned in the Rogue River in that area have been found.
I think it was the next day, search and rescue, there was boots on the ground, if you will. They've scoured the edges of the Rogue River, for a mile before and a mile after. And then they took a cadaver dog downstream, working the edges of the Rogue River. And so there was efforts put into, initially, was there any evidence or sign of Danny? And now, typically, bodies that go into the Rogue River, there's certainly points of the Rogue River. It's a very fast-moving river, depending on the time of year. But typically, people that go into the Rogue River are found. And again, I use typically, you know, broad term, but typically people that we know have gone into the Rogue River, say we'll have a witness, you know, somebody trying to swim across it, and then they're seen going under. Typically within a few days, we find them, or the next county over, we'll find them. So that's just the other piece of this that I don't really know what to do with. Why, if he did go into the Rogue River, why hasn't he been found? It, depending on the time of year, like I said, and what part you go in. So the area where Danny, if he did go in that area, typically it's not really that fast moving, right? It's pretty broad in that area. And so in that time of year, summertime, if he did go in and drown, he could have just gone under and his body should have surfaced kind of with decomp and the temperature of the river and that kind of thing. He maybe should have surfaced in a day or two, or if he kind of went downstream, there's areas just kind of, I'm trying to think my directions here, but kind of north of where he's at, there are going to be kind of choke points where he maybe could have got caught up on some logs or debris and that kind of thing. So the Rogue River is just kind of funny. It depends on where you go in. Like I said, I can't think of a case where we know somebody's gone into the river that we haven't recovered them. I just kind of put it to you that way. And over the years, I mean, I've worked probably 20 or 30 cases where, hey, my uncle was swimming across and we watched him get in trouble and we couldn't get to him, or, you know, those kind of cases, or somebody falls off a boat and they can't find them and then we find them a day or two later. So that's kind of my point. Typically, people that go in that area, the Rogue River gets much more dangerous once you get into the adjoining counties. Josephine County, very, very dangerous areas of the Rogue River. And there are people that have not been recovered from those areas. So I guess my point, kind of where Danny went in, if he did go into the river, my guess would be he would have been recovered at some point. So even a couple of years later, you know, a bone or something comes up and is discovered. And so I guess that's kind of odd to me.
If Danny didn't go into the river that night, what else could have happened to him?
So then if he doesn't go into the river, he wanders. And certainly this area, lots of mountains, lots of wilderness. So if he is delusional or having a mental episode, or does he go somewhere and, you know, dies of exposure, dies of whatever, falls, hits his head, you know, gets a traumatic brain injury and dies, then animals typically become involved. They'll start scattering. And so again, why hasn't a bone surfaced? We have lots of hunters. We have lots of mushroom hunters. So they're always finding bones. So again, why haven't we discovered something? You know, and typically they call them in. We go out on lots and lots of bones that are turn out to be animal. People do call them in, you know, hey, I found this bone. I think it's human. This county, we have a great, great search and rescue team. We act on all of that. Every time a bone is discovered, we're putting eyes on it. If we have question, we send photo. I just had one last week. People were digging a trench in town and they found a bone. And yeah, I mean, I looked at it and I'm like, boy, that is pretty close. And I sent several photos up to our anthropologist. She said, no, it's not human. So we have things in place in this county. I mean, we treat any found bone seriously. So why hasn't something of Danny Kelly surfaced? And my only other thought to that, if he died in an area where a remote area or at the bottom of a cliff, somewhere maybe where an animal could not get to him, and he just hasn't been discovered. I mean, that's a possibility. We had a recovered person here 7-8 years ago. It was a missing we'd had for 3 years, but he was in an area. We recovered probably 90% of him. Very, very little scattering just because, you know, the bigger animals couldn't get to him. So, you know, maybe he is out there and just has not been discovered because the lack of scattering. That is another possibility. Looking at it from a death investigator, history is so important. I almost rather have history than a body, because history typically will tell you why somebody died. And so when I kind of go back to that, you know, this is somebody that's not acting like he normally acts, you know, and so compromised behavior, you know, so did that lead him to wander off and, like I said, fall into something or, you know, succumb to the environment or outside of the Rogue River? Certainly he could be somewhere that he just hasn't been found, or animals can't get to him to help us find him, if you will. Just sort of my personal thoughts on it.
While speaking to Detective Pike, he made an interesting point about why some cases go unsolved.
My fear is that somebody, a county, pick one on the coast, say somebody turns in a bone, hey, is this human? And they go, well, we're not sure, and they put it into evidence. And that bone is still sitting in evidence. Stories like that do happen. Just thinking about this over years, his body or remains or partial remains could be somewhere in storage. Here in this county, and I'm going to go back 10 or 12 years ago, I get a call from one of the small city police, and they said, hey, we're going through purging inventory, and we found a human skull. I'm like, what? Why would you put a human skull into evidence and magically it's going to get solved, you know? So I go retrieve it, and the teeth, there's the upper dentition, but they're definitely like flat and it looks very old. So I get a hold of the state anthropologist, I get it to her. And so that, in the back of my head, I'm, you know, I always kind of worry about that, that somebody has, you know, an agency has a bone or something, and the whole system is only as good as everybody contributes to it. So, you know, in this day and age, there are still agencies that don't know about UNT. They don't know about NamUs. They don't know about, you know, what to do when you find stuff or you think you have stuff, and ask for help.
Danny has been missing for nearly 24 years, but Detective Pike is still hoping that someone will come forward with a clue that will help them solve this and bring closure to his family.
If anyone has, obviously, any information about Danny Kelly, or so the other thing is sometimes people will hold on to information. I'm sure the police already know this, and so they won't come forward. We found that in cases where, you know, we've interviewed people a year or two later, and they'll say, well, I thought you knew that. And no, this is the first time we've heard that. So if somebody has something that they think we already know, please share it with us. So that is my number one thing. Do not ever feel like what I have to offer isn't going to be important, and or what I have, I'm sure somebody else has already told you. So that's the message I would get out to people. If you have anything about Danny Kelly, let us know about that. They could call the main sheriff's office phone number, which is area code 541-774-6800. And day or night, let us know, hey, I've got information on a long-term missing person, Danny Kelly. And somebody will be in touch to get that statement or to get that information.
Shane spoke about the effect his father's disappearance has had on his life.
I mean, honestly, I went on a drug bans for multiple years because just whatever, and that was my self-medication, and I don't know, nothing's ever been the same since his disappearance.
I was 17
Yeah, I mean, that messes me forever. That was my, so I had just had my first child in November of 94. I went up there to visit him, but my child was still a newborn, so I didn't take her. I went up there to visit him, you know, congratulate him on being, you know, grandpa and all that stuff, stayed with him for a month, and I came back. And yeah, then this happened right before. And then I remember, yeah, my first Father's Day as me being a father was without my dad, you know. It was a pretty messed up time. And then that just fueled my drug addiction. And I went in and out of prison. And, you know, from when I turned 18 till I was 21, I was pretty much in prison the whole time. And then I quit doing drugs. And then I just stayed with alcohol for a lot of years. And now I'm at like 16 months sober off alcohol and everything. I haven't touched drugs in like 10 years. And then now I don't drink or anything. So, I'm still an active member of AA and the steps that we do to get sober and all that stuff. And through all that process, I always knew, but like I kind of realized like this thing with my dad was like a big issue with me. And I kind of fueled my always wanting to be numb and drunk or whatever, you know. So like I quit meth after a couple times going to prison. I said, man, every time I do that stuff, I go to prison. I was able to work and keep a job and raise my kids when I was drinking. But after multiple years of drinking, like I had to drink every day or else I'd get DTs. So I was kind of like a functioning alcoholic that went to work. But then I just realized, man, I just got to quit.
After all of these years, Levina still wonders if her son could be out there somewhere alive.
Sometimes I think he's still around and he doesn't know anything because of what he was given and if he hit his head when he went in the river, and he's just somewhere. I can tell you one time in the 6 years that we were down there, I know he wanted to go to Mexico so bad. And he's the type that would find his mother, you know. He's the type that would look for me. There was a guy in a restaurant from a distance. I thought, oh my God, I think that's Danny. Of course, Ron and the rest of the people at the table said, that's not Danny. And, well, boy, it looked like him, and it wouldn't surprise me because he would come looking for me. I mean, if he wanted to find me, he wouldn't stop at nothing. So that's why I feel guilty. I stopped at something, you know, I stopped at a time. I didn't want to even go to Mexico at that time, but we'd already bought a place down there. I went and I felt like I was deserting my son.
Narda told us about the impact this has had on all of Danny's children.
I feel bad for Shane because Shane, out of all the kids, was the oldest. And Shane, too, had, you know, he was brought up with a family who his mom, and I have nothing against his mom, but she also was mixed up with drugs. He had a dad that was mixed up with drugs and alcohol, and he was caught in the middle of it. He's being given beers and everything else by his grandparents and his dad. And he was young. When Danny went missing, it was like Shane was already on a bad path. And now he carries that guilt with him because he said that he feels like he didn't do anything. And like I told him, I said, Shane, you were a kid. What were you going to do? You know, seriously, what were you going to do? There was nothing you could do. And I do feel bad for him because he too lost a lot of years with his dad. And, you know, and all of them have been affected by it in one way or another because of the craziness behind it all.
So what happened to Danny Kelly on May 31st, 1995? Did he simply run off in a delusional state and drowned in the river? Was this some staged incident so he could run off to Mexico, leaving behind all of the problems that he had here? Is it true that Tim saw him after he ran off, and Danny said that he just didn't want to be found? Or did years of drug abuse taint Tim's memory? Is it as Narda believes that Levina knows more? While working on this case, one thing that stood out to me was that in the early interviews in Danny's file, everyone mentions that he looked yellow. His sister noted that along with personality changes, he now had a much lower tolerance for alcohol. Could it be as Detective Pike suggested, that he was experiencing some kind of medical issue, like a liver problem, and had no idea. Even if that is the case, it still doesn't solve the mystery of what happened to Danny Kelly. We may never know exactly what happened to Danny, but Shane is seeking to find some answers and closure. He's been deeply affected by his father's disappearance. When Danny went missing, he was described as 6 feet tall and weighing approximately 160 pounds with brown hair and green eyes. If you have any information about Danny's disappearance, please call the Jackson County Sheriff's Office at 541-774-6800.
I even called that thing with Robert Stack, you know, where he would look for missing people. The number that was on, because I watched that show all the time, before Danny ever went missing. I mean, I always watched it to see if anybody on there that I knew.
But he was very intelligent and very, like, he could do anything. Now, that's what I do remember about him. It didn't matter. I mean, you could put him anywhere, and he always excelled at anything and everything he ever did. He was very intelligent. There was always this thing like, well, they're either going to find his remains or he's just going to show back up. And then, like, I don't know, just year after year, and here we are almost 24 years later, and there's still no answers. So I used to just tell everyone in general that my dad was dead because it was just easier for me to explain it that way. So that's how my older kids, that's how they grew up. It's just, I just always said he was dead. It just helped me. It was easier for me to explain. But over the past couple of years, I told them that, you know, there's never been a body found. And, I don't know, it's been hard.
If you lose a child and then you've got another child missing, it's pretty scary. I'm afraid every day that I'll lose my last one.
That brings us to the end of episode 177. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this episode. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. You can follow the show on Facebook, where there's a page and a private discussion group. My Twitter handle is thevanishedpod, and you can also find me on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Colorado. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.